Good evening. Welcome to the Celery Report. Today is Thursday, September 8th, 2011. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Well, the new blog is launched. We hope you got the information and you've had a chance to try it. We truly hope it makes the Celery Report experience much more accessible, richer, and just more enjoyable for you to use. If you go to the website and you log in, what you'll see is the blog will open up and you will be able on the blog post for each Celery report to access the MP3 file when it's posted straight to the blog. We're also going to have chapters and outlines so you can, they'll make it easier for you to just listen selectively. So if you had a question and we answered it, you can just jump in and find that. If you click, there's a new master link up at the top right. You know you're logged in because it'll say welcome and your name up in the right-hand corner. If you click on the master link right beneath that, it'll pull up all the Celery report blogs. And we have the MP3s on the last several, and over time we hope to move the whole archive over. But as shows go on, obviously there'll be more and more MP3 on the blog, and you can still use your subscriber control panel for the old archives. We've also put up a new page, which is a master link of resources to make it much easier for you to find things like the Precious Metals Market Library and all the different audio seminars. And we'll also make sure that the links and books and DVDs we described during the Celery report, we'll put those links up in the notes to it. Now, the wonderful thing about all of this is you can also make comments. So in addition to posting your questions at the cart or in the webinar software while we're doing the Celery report, you can also post questions on the blog and comment and discuss. Now, the comments will be moderated, but we're going to do our best to be timely. If you have any questions about how to use or have any problems with passwords, please let us know. Darlene Heckman runs our customer service, and her number is 888-755-3548. And she loves helping you and helping you learn how to navigate. So we want to make the Celery report experience excellent for you. So let Darlene know what she can do to help. Tonight, Precious Metals Market Report with Franklin Sanders. I can't think of anybody I'd rather talk to this week than Franklin Sanders. So I'm very glad he could join us. He's on his way, believe it or not, to the beach in South Carolina, and I'm at the beach in Massachusetts. And I'm reminded very much of my favorite editorials ever written was one called Sweater Weather, and it was about that first day of fall when you first need to put on a sweater and how wonderful it feels. And I've been sitting in the misty sort of beautiful weather. It's about 70 degrees and sunny and breezy and sitting over the ocean outside of Massachusetts. And I've had a couple days of my first sweater weather of the year, and it's been wonderful. Our theme tonight is reinventing everything because change is accelerating. And I've told before the story in the Celery Report, I was giving a speech once in California with Caroline Casey, and she said, you know, this isn't just about money and this isn't just about corruption. This is about the reinvention of everything. And I looked over her and I thought, oh, that's why it seems so overwhelming, because we really are reinventing everything. And of course, many of us are called to reinvent our lives or our skills or our work as we reinvent the economy. Part of the challenge is how you do it when all the money in the world is showering you with false promises followed up by more rounds of fraud. But you can do it, and I think one of the most important things you need to do that is imagination. And there's nothing like ocean air to get my imagination working. I've been thinking a lot as I've been here. I've been trying to sort of get my perspective. I've been thinking a lot about a story from a wonderful book called Even Cowgirls Get the Blues, where the protagonist falls down into the ditch in a drug-induced stupor and has an epiphany about the world. And she said, you know, the problem in the world is not the Republican or the Democrats, and it's not the men versus the women, or it's not gays versus straight, or any of these other sort of divisive categories and sort of trigger things. It's really people with small minds. And I'm, as I've been sitting here, I've been redoubling my effort to think about how I can seek out and associate with excellent people. because when you're reinventing everything, that makes an enormous difference. It's one of the reasons that I'm very happy to be in cahoots with Franklin Sanders. And I remember I once said to him when I first met him, I said, I'm looking for a precious metals dealer who can help my clients. And he said, well, why would you come to me? And I said, well, I want somebody who has proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that they can be the law when you can't depend on the law. And, you know, but it was, for me, it was an excellent choice. And it was for the reminder of how much can come if you're just really careful about who you associate with. Money and markets. My big viewpoint as an investment advisor is economic warfare. I kind of look at the world through the prism of economic warfare. And so politics and the behavior of cartels and syndicates is very, very important. So I'm focused on the really, really big plays. And, you know, there are two ways to kind of approach investment and sort of, and when I say investment, I don't mean just money. I mean your time and your health. And there are two ways to deal with it. One is with inside information. And the other is what Franklin always calls aligning with the primary trend. So I spend a lot of time trying to figure out, okay, you know, is the primary trend still going to hold? For a long time, the primary trend has been navigating a falling dollar, navigating a deteriorating federal credit, and navigating the long-term rise adjustment in the relationship between tangibles and paper, particularly precious metals, which is why we do a precious metals market report once a month. What I've been watching is are there new primary trends forming? And I've come to believe that there's a distinct possibility of a new primary trend forming. I talked a little bit about it in the last couple of weeks. I want to talk about the news this week from the viewpoint of looking at that primary trend. And that's really comes down to what I call the real estate flip. What I saw as assistant secretary in 1989 at the end of the last housing bubble burst was a tremendous amount of money left this country, moved offshore, pulling out of real estate at the highs, and then they came back in and bought cheap. And my question this time is going to be, you know, when is that gathering going to happen? And there are a lot of signs that it started, and I want to talk about that. Now, we've seen tremendous bad news over the last week coming out of the financial system. A lot of, sort of fear in the financial community about the European bank crisis, about slowdown in Asia, about a stalling of the economy here in the United States. And that fear must be really real because we watched the U.S. president give a speech tonight to a joint session of Congress, introducing a new jobs act, and we have, despite all the talk of deficits and a downgrade by Standard & Poor's over an inability to deal with the deficit, the President and Congress jumping up and down and cheering about spending lots more money on jobs, programs, and infrastructure. That tells me that there's some real fear behind it. Now, let's talk a little bit about what we heard in the speech and what it sort of means to this gathering into a new primary trend. The unemployment rate is high. If you listen to John Williams at Shadow Stats, the much more reliable source than the government, the unemployment is rising, and it's that and a sluggish economy is going to be a central issue for Obama. We had the leading institutional contender on the Republican side, former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney, who's the sort of leading party choice for the Republican nomination, yesterday offered his 59-point economic plan, including tax cuts. And then he and the other Republican candidates debated in California. The internet polls today show that Ron Paul absolutely clobbered him. That doesn't make any difference if you look at the media. The media is pushing Perry, and my guess, as I said last week, is that Perry's job is to take out Paul so that the road can be clear for Romney. Now, the president's response today was, I think, you know, in part a response to the fact that they're coming into a presidential and congressional election, but it was also, I think, a response to real concern in the market. I would describe the speech as politically brilliant. You know, the forces that gathered to write it clearly knew which buttons to push. If you understand what he's really saying, or what's going to come out the other side of the sausage factory, it's pretty different than what he's saying, and it's not unlike the election where he said one thing and got into office and said another. But let's look at what's proposed. They're proposing a payroll tax reduction and business tax cuts, all in the hope of getting employment going. They're talking about funding significant infrastructure building. Clearly, there's a lot of infrastructure building that's needed in the United States. There's sort of token referrals to the next generation of manufacturing in the U.S. and how to bring it back, including incentives to educate and train a small number of engineers, 10,000 engineers. They're pitching small business and construction industries, particularly with school construction, 35,000 schools, as well as transportation projects. And not surprisingly, as the president has been doing for a long time now, a pitch to extend unemployment benefits. They're scheduled to lapse at the end of the year. Also a promise of tax reduction next year for middle-class families. It's a little bit a real switch from somebody who passed a major health care tax. Lots of talk of cutting red tape for entrepreneurs raising capital. Hard to tell exactly what that means. Now, what's really going to happen, or what's not in it? No relief to students with rocketing debt and no way to get jobs. The effort to continue to strip benefits from teachers, post office workers, other people absolutely scheduled to continue. We have a chamber study announced today before the speech, Chamber of Commerce, on repatriating corporate profits. There's $1 trillion of repatriation or $1 trillion of profits offshore. It's going to be taxed if it's going to come off onshore. The chamber is saying if we repatriate and give tax benefits or tax relief to bring it back, it will create 2 million jobs. Now, what does this all really mean? Well, let's hold this for a second and flip over to the mortgage development or the mortgage markets. We have the Federal Housing Finance Agency, not FHA, as many writers picked up on, but the agency that's overseeing the private or the publicization of Freddie and Fannie. We had FHFA bring lawsuits against 17 banks for basically mortgage fraud. At the same time, we're watching continued fire and weather problems. My expectation is we're watching a significant covert QE3 in the mortgage area with Fannie, Freddie, and FHA bringing in lots of mortgages under the guise of different emergencies around the country. We also have the president mentioning in his speech an offer of refinancing. So federal agencies, again, FHA, Freddie, Fannie, will be offering to bring refinancing to people who haven't been able to do it. We have tremendous number of people with dropped income or dropped appraised values on their mortgages who haven't been able to take advantage of lower interest rates. If Freddie, Fannie, and FHA make it possible for them to do it, that's going to be big savings for many, many people. And so offer to refinance. And then still not mentioned in the speech, but continue talk of wholesale transfer of mortgages into institutional investors. Okay, let's connect the dots on all of this. We have the government taking in huge amounts of mortgages and presumably at very above market prices, so making the banks and financial institutions hold, turning around and planning on transferring those back cheap just at the time that $1 trillion is going to come flying into the country, repatriated profits, which means it can pick all those mortgages and real estate up very, very cheap. And at the same time, it's going to mollify the average American with refinancings, but also by refinancing, you cut off the liability. We have literally hundreds of thousands of mortgages that can claim fraudulent inducement and all sorts of other frauds and scams, and we have real gridlock on the MERS system. Many municipalities having been cut out of transfer fees, and real fee title issues. All of this can get taken care of in a jumbo refinancing. And what can't be taken care of in a refinancing, the Department of Justice will now have control of, because by bringing lawsuits against all the different players, they can assert in court that they should have primacy, and everybody else has to stand down or get behind them. So if you look at it, to me, what it looks like is an enormous cleanup operation. And if you look at how it's being done, it's really quite clever, because in literally a year or two, you can transfer enormous amount of real estate positions. Basically, you've taken all these neighborhoods, you've ethnic cleansed them, you've knocked people out, now they can be gentrified. And you've done it under the guise of government and figured out a way to re-engineer yourself out of the fraud liability. So if you connect the dots between these things, I think what we're looking up to is teeing up a wholesale transfer of real estate, which is going to be, arguably, it could wind up one of the biggest real estate plays, if not the biggest that we've seen so far. Now, key to doing this is when you transfer this real estate, what you need to make those equity investments work is, of course, first the below market transfer from the government. So that's what we're kind of watching. The second is you need to re-engineer government investment. And I think part of what Obama is teeing up is some of the different pieces they need to prototype that re-engineering. And I would also include the rural development proposals that he has proposed and didn't mention, in fact, in this speech. And then finally, the third thing you need to really make this a very profitable sort of big primary trend play is new technology. And, of course, $64,000 question is how much of the energy technology is it possible that will be brought in? I've been putting up on the blog videos of some of the new car technology, cars that run on water, electric cars, all sorts of stuff. It's pretty exciting what's possible. But the other thing is energy technology. If we make available technology which can radically reduce the price of heating and electricity, it can have very dramatic impact on both the real estate market and valuations in the stock market. And I'm thrilled. I asked Adam Tromley, who was on to talk about entrainment and subliminal programming, and we just got fantastic responses to that. If you haven't heard it, I recommend it. But Adam has agreed to come back in September 22nd, 2 weeks from now, and talk about zero-point energy and energy technology, because I think that I'm seeing more and more signs that may indicate they may be interested in flipping the model. Article up on the blog, let me just read it to you quickly. Tech company to build science ghost town in New Mexico. This is up under science and technology in the blog. New Mexico, home to several of the nation's premier scientific nuclear and military institutions, is planning to take part in an unprecedented science, a 20-square-mile model of a small U.S. city. So this is going to be a ghost town that's supposed to be a replica of the typical American town of 35,000 people. And the idea is to create essentially a laboratory for, quote, new green technology. Whenever they say smart or green, you need to hear a different word than that. So beware. But they'll be testing out new energy technology. They'll be testing out smart grid technology. It's worth taking a look at it. But this is the kind of prototyping you're doing ahead of basically repositioning the real estate and looking to reposition and bring in this new technology. So what does all this mean to you? I think it's going to be very important to keep an eye on whether this $1 trillion gets repatriated, and I think that's going to be done under the guise of a Job Act or some kind of, you know, Get America Moving program. If they succeed in doing it, don't be surprised to see a real support happen in the real estate market, particularly with values starting to rise by 2013. If people can refinance their mortgages at lower interest rates despite the property being underwater or the incomes being down, it's going to make a, it's going to be a big jolt to the real estate market. If the new technology is rolled out, expect it to have potentially very significant impact on providing price, price support to stock markets as well. But we have to just see. The thing to understand, because we've done a lot of shows now on the smart meter and this kind of technology, is the new technology means the average household is going to be a little bit like the Truman Show. If you haven't seen that movie, we'll have to do it on this Larry Report. But we're talking about essentially 24-hour, 7-day-a-week surveillance that's coming into your house through the utilities, and a lot of the technology is pretty scary. It's pretty Orwellian. And so what it means to you is you need to understand the privacy and health issues and adjust your habits accordingly if you move into it, or take the time and money to really get off the grid, because it's going to cut one way or another, and it's absolutely coming. We're going to talk with Franklin tonight after the Precious Metals Report a little bit more about enterprises that do not depend on government money. A lot of this speech, and the reason I say it was so brilliant politically, it was designed to really get buy-in back into the system. But when you come down to the ground at the end of the sausage factory, there are two kinds of businesses. And the business you want is you want to be in a business that does not depend on government money, because any that does is going to be very politically controlled. And ultimately, it will probably not work to your advantage. Finally, if you're a student or a teacher, don't think that anything you heard tonight should encourage you to get back into the system or stay in the system. This is a positive speech to make it politically easier to keep the same reengineering coming that we've been watching, whether it's massive student debt or just, you know, making it impossible for teachers to teach because they're too busy giving tests. A deeper issue, though, behind all of this is highlighted by a wonderful article by Douglas Rushkoff. It's up in the Science and Technology section on the blog. And what he's talking about is the extent to which technology is really reengineering labor in whole new ways, whether it's, you know, we're going global or we simply don't, you know, email needs means that we mail less letters. And I disagree a little bit with his analysis of what's happening in the post office. But this, there's no doubt that we need to evolve where we spend our time, et cetera. And I think it's worth looking at the deeper issue as to how technology is changing our lives and changing what we do. And certainly if you if you're in school or you have family and friends who are in school, they want to be thinking about these issues as they build their skills for where the world is going. So it's worth taking a look at. My hero this week, we're coming into the anniversary of 9/11. I wrote a prayer for 9/11 that I publish every year on the anniversary, so it will be published tomorrow. But I'm reminded as I was reading through it and just updating the year for 2011, how many of the families of people killed in 9/11 have worked tirelessly to bring forward the truth of 9/11, which I do think is very important, as well as the architects and engineers and wonderful writers and researchers like Paul Thompson and David Ray Griffith. These people are incredible heroes who have made tremendous investments of time and effort to in a contribution, which I have to say I think is absolutely wonderful. My world is much better for their presence and their contributions, and I just want to honor them tonight. And then finally, we're going to do most questions with Franklin, but before I start, I had a question on Fukushima, talking about whether or not the health issues as a result of the radiation and its spreading through the atmosphere around the world are serious. The reports I continue to get is that the health issues are very serious and of great concern. The person wanted to know, you know, where could we move? I'm a great believer that we should choose our place according to what our purpose is in this world and not keep running around the world looking for a safe place. I don't think I have an expression that there is no way. So I'm not convinced that there's a place you can go to get away from the risks of a nuclear accident, whether it's Fukushima or any of the others that could happen. I do want to point out Dr. Laura Thompson did a wonderful interview with us on how to build your immune system to protect from these kinds of risks, and that MP3 and transcript is up on the blog. So, and I will continue to look for somebody to talk about Fukushima. I do think the health issues are serious, and I continue to be concerned about what the health impact will mean for the Japanese economy and for the ecosystem and both the physical and the financial ecosystem. So I don't mean to underestimate it. And as I said when it happened, and since then, it's one of the reasons why I've become so defensive in my investment positions, because I do think it's one of the great risks that we're dealing with. So I don't mean to underestimate it, but I do think that we can't live our lives from fear. We have to choose where we live because of what we want to accomplish in this world. Anyway, so with that, Franklin is on the road. I think he's outside of Chattanooga. Are you with us, Franklin?
I'm right here in Jasper, Tennessee.
Well, we're all excited that you're going to get a vacation, because every time you go on vacation, you come back full of vim and vigor with all sorts of new ideas.
I hope so. I sure hope so.
Well, I know, you know, it's funny because precious metals, you know, the summer is supposed to be the quiet time, and it hasn't been the quiet time. It's been rocking and rolling. So I think the reason you're so tired is because you've been so busy. But why don't you tell us what's been going on since the last month when we spoke?
Well, everything. You had the debt downgrade. You had the crisis break out with the European banks. And then this week, of course, what that was doing was sending money fleeing in a flight to safety into the U.S. dollar and treasury debt. But oddly enough, a huge amount fled into gold and silver. So there's a change of quality in this crisis versus the last crisis, because the last time, you know, gold and silver both took huge hits, and only the dollar benefited. Well, the Swiss had all they could take, and on Monday, Labor Day, they announced that they were going to sell as much currency as necessary. They would not tolerate a rate greater than 1.20 francs to the euro. Well, in one day, the Swiss franc fell 7%. One day. And it's exactly that sort of surprise party that makes me say I will not trade in any kind of currencies, because even though they trade as if they were a normal market, they're always subject to surprise parties like that. And that money, that sent money, oddly enough, fleeing into the dollar, out of francs, of course, but also out of the euro. So to dollar today, what you see is the dollar right under the 76.25. The dollar index under the 76.25 point, which is the top of the range. And it is fixing to break out. It's been in a long consolidation. And I really don't have much doubt that it'll go through that and rally towards 78 or 79 over the next several months. The euro broke today and fell below 140. The target on the euro, minimum target, is 130. And it could very easily go to 120. Now, let me make one thing clear about the dollar. When I say the dollar is going to rally to 78 or 79, the long-term trend is down for the dollar, and the long-term measured target is 39 on the dollar index. So subtract 39 from 76.25 today, and you can see how far it's got to fall. But temporarily, for a short time, the dollar is going to rise. And that may put a headwind up against gold and silver. It's a little hard to say, you know, that silver and gold have been so strong for the past 8 months, and especially over the summer, that I have kept saying to myself, I've been on the wrong side of the market, because I kept saying, well, we're going to get a correction here. We're going to get a correction. Well, we haven't. Not a correction of the order that I was expecting. So Maybe we'll get that. I think that you've got more upside in both gold and silver, and what's happened in the last few days. You know, you got this break in the market. Gold went down from 1923 to 1792 in 2 days. And then today it popped right back up. It was up $40
today. It really did.
And silver
did
too.
It was like a follow doll.
Right, and that's exactly the same sort of behavior when we saw 2 weeks ago when we got the previous top, and we got a key reversal, which is a 2-day operation where you have a lower close. The first you have a break in a new high ground and a lower close that first day, and then the second day it closes lower still. Well, you got two key reversals. You got a downside key reversal, and then it went right into an upside key reversal and turned right back around after a big drop. So I don't think that kind of behavior, that kind of strength has left the gold market yet, so you're not looking at any big correction. The stocks, I know that there are all kinds of people. Just turn on CNBC and you'll see all the smart people talking. Of course, you wonder if they're that smart, why did they work for the TV and for a TV station instead of being quiet and making money themselves? But if you listen to what they say, you don't wonder anymore, because they still expect the stock market to go up. By the way I look at it, it's made four legs down. Four legs of a five-wave move, and we've got another big move down that'll take stocks to 10,000, 10,300 before they turn around, maybe 9,600 before they turn around. And I think
if you look at all the charts and the fundamentals on the stock market, it looks absolutely dreadful. And both the performance of the precious metals market, plus the fundamentals on the stock market, plus the fear over the last week about the liquidity, particularly coming out of Europe. And I think, Franklin, you know, I'm sure you didn't watch the president's speech last night. Tonight, but
that's
if
a
you
pretty
look
good
at it, well, I had to watch it because I'm, in fact,
I know you did.
I had to watch it because the guy from Coast to Coast called me today and said, would you come on tonight and comment on the president's speech? I said, oh, okay, I guess I'm going to watch the president's speech. But here's the thing. If you had taken, because I remember, when this would happen, if you would take the 20 top speech writers and sort of political campaign advisors in the administration and got them in a room and said, okay, we got to buy everybody back into the system. How are we going to do it? That's the speech. That's the speech they gave. It was, because you and I have seen this many times, and we're going to talk about this some more, is, every time the model starts to fall apart, they sit down and say, okay, how do we buy everybody back in? And I think it's because both the stock market and the precious metals market is saying, too many people are ready to walk with their money out of the system.
Well, I think that what you're saying is accurate. That certainly is how it's designed. But I go back to my simplistic contention that they, in a panic, they only have two weapons, inflation and Blarney. Now, you can call Blarney propaganda or whatever you want to call it, but that's what it is. It's Blarney. They get up there and they trot out Warren Buffett or George Bush or Greenspan or whatever other big name they've got to say, nobody ever made money shorting the United States. And it's just... it's whistling in the dark past the cemetery is all it is. And yet they, people are so desperate for their world to continue the way it has that they will believe any lie they're told. And so I just point out, the scheme that you laid out tonight probably is something like what they've got planned, but there are a lot of slips between the cup and the lip. There are just a whole lot of things that can go wrong with that.
Oh, I don't think they have. If you look at what they have planned, my read of it is they're planning on sticking it to Main Street hard. They're going to roll the teachers. They're going to roll the government workers. They're going to absolutely, they're sticking all the fraudulent paper into the pension funds. And then they're going to transfer the real estate to themselves cheap and come in and bubble it again. So
right.
This
they're
is
going to get rid of their liabilities. They're going to strip our assets. That's basically
right. So this is a beat down of the first order. And I have to give, you know, Barack Obama credit. He stood up and put a spin on it that made it look like it was, you know, the best thing that ever happened to you. And it's a beatdown.
Well, I don't.
I think this is
one,
boot.
You're the one that came up with the phrase "tapeworm economy," and I think it's a brilliant description. But the thing that has to be remembered always is that eventually a parasite grows so big and takes so much of the nutrition of its host that the host dies. And I'm not sure whether they've gotten so big and taken so much, whether the host can stand anymore. I think at some point you break down. Well, let me go back to gold. Let me give you some boundaries here. 1923 was the high. So if gold gets through 1920 again, it's going to keep on going. It'll continue its rally. Down below 1792 was the low yesterday. If it goes below that, then there might be a problem. There's support around 1700, 1650 down in there. Lowest I could possibly see it going is the 200-day moving average. But I don't think it's going to break 1792. It's acting just exactly the way it did in the last correction. Let me go back and just emphasize something. I understand that all of those people who work on TV for a living and pretend to be financial analysts and forecasters are saying that gold is in a bubble. But I could give you 15 different ways to examine gold's behavior now versus its behavior in 1979 and 80, and none of them show that gold is in a bubble. It's just not. So there's more. We have not exhausted this primary trend yet. It's got farther to go. Silver, the parameters on silver has got to get over $44, and as long as it holds $40, it's still in the running to go higher. So, and again, I point out there's a monstrous change in character, in that scared money is now going into gold. So gold has become an alternative currency. Silver, apparently, to a lesser extent, the same is true of it. And so all of that is still unfolding and has, I think, a long ways to unfold yet.
It's funny because my expectation is the dollar will kind of, the ceiling in my mind is 80. It sounds like
yes.
You're 79. But I think you could see very strong precious metals this between now and the end of the year, even with a strong dollar. If you look at all the indications, whether they're bringing money back in or they're, you know, what I think is really going on with a covert QE3, there's just too much money they're printing out. So now, do you think there's any risk of more sort of spiraling devaluations? I mean, the Swiss has started, but
those have been crypto devaluations. Those have all been the kind of thing that diplomats do when they smile at each other and they know that their country's getting ready to make a sneak attack on another country. The dollar has been, the administration has been competitively devaluing the dollar since 2001, I think. I think there's been a conscious decision made to do that. And the Swiss announcement pulls back the curtain on the whole competitive devaluation war. Now there's no question we're going to competitively devalue our currency every time it threatens to rise. And that's, as you remember, exactly what happened in the 1930s with a series of competitive devaluations. Yeah. So
I think the Swiss did is very serious.
Well, it's a change in character. It's a change in quality of the situation, just like downgrading the U.S. debt openly. Not that everybody didn't know already that it was sorry, but the fact that it was openly done by the rating agency certainly changes the whole atmosphere. It changes the backdrop. It changes the quality of the game. So,
although Bloomberg pointed out that the next week S&P gave a AAA to mortgage-backed security of subprime mortgages.
Uh-huh. Well, I don't. It's not the name of the thing. It's not the essence of a thing that counts in America. It's the illusion of the thing. It's all an act. It's all a farce. And so that's what, you know, I mean, as I said, everybody knew that the U.S. government didn't manage its finances correctly. But nonetheless, they've given them a AAA plus all these years.
When when I first became the FHA commissioner, I had somebody come in on my staff, and OMB came in with a study that basically said we had a negative equity of $125 billion, and basically because Americans were bankrupt. And I said, well, if that's the case, then the U.S. Treasuries are bankrupt, and they had a hard time aligning the notion that that a country reflected the strength of its households and vice versa. It was very interesting. Anyway, so you had a very interesting thing happen to you in your business, in the dealership, and you sent a wonderful description of the story out to all your subscribers. And I think it's a very, very important and telling story, and I would love it if you would tell it now.
I have this wonderful customer down in Texas, and I love ladies from Texas. They're all real perky and strong-minded, and you can just tell them the minute they get on the phone. You can, about three words, and you say, she's from Texas. I recognize that. And she's wonderful to deal with, and she calls me her boyfriend. So this 92-year-old lady has a son who trades futures, and I know him too, and we've done business for more than 10 years. So he wanted her to sell her gold position. And she asked me about it, and I said, well, I really don't like doing that, but because I knew he was planning on, I thought he was planning on buying back lower down. He was expecting a top. But anyway, she wanted to do it, and, you know, I'm her servant, not her master, so I sold the gold for it, and it amounted to like $673,000. So I would normally send a wire for that, but she said she wanted a check, so I sent her the check, and everything was done, and I called her up, and I said, now, listen, you want to be sure and deposit that thing as soon as possible. So she went down to the bank, and she sat down with this check, and they called to make sure the check was good, and she said, now, I want to cash that check. Well, you can imagine they didn't want her to do that. Well, she said that you can wait till the check clears. I understand you got to wait till it clears. Well, we don't have that much money. We'd have to order it from the Federal Reserve. Well, I understand that. You can order it, and they'll have it in here next Thursday, and that'll be just fine. Well, this set her off on a trip through the entire bank hierarchy, climbing higher and higher, and at each level being refused. So she finally got to the head knocker in the bank, and he said, oh, we only have your interests at heart, and we're just concerned about our obligation to you. Well, you know, ladies from Texas can get pretty tart when they want to. And she said, well, listen, you don't have any obligation to me once you cash that check. That's the only obligation you got to me. So she said, I'll tell you what. She said, if you're so worried about your obligation to me, you get me the money, and I'll take it and I'll put it in a safe deposit box right there in your vault. Oh, no, we can't do that. Well, how about this? You get me $50,000 a week until we get the whole thing done, and every week we'll get another $50,000. Oh, no, we can't do that. So her son called the Texas Banking Commission, talked to two different bureaucrats. The first one, of course, came back with a flurry of, oh, well, there are IRS issues about that. He said, I don't care, and she doesn't care if she has to fill out 50 forms. She wants her money. That one couldn't help him. He went up to another one and basically got stonewalled there, too. So here's the thing. What does that mean? What does it mean when she has money in the bank and they refuse to give her the money? What does that mean? Now, I know $673,000 is a lot of money, but it's her money. And don't think that, you know, she's some senile old lady, because she's not. She absolutely knows her mind and is in perfect command of her faculties. And they just stiff-armed her, stonewalled her, and the government agency responsible for their oversight backed them up.
So, well, you know, I've seen this at much lower amounts all over the country for the last 5 or 6 years. You know, banks who wouldn't honor $2,000 or $10,000, or, you know, basically the message is you have to, and we've gotten reports, Franklin, of retail stores being charged incredible amounts of money to try and get coins or small denominated bills. And I think there's an absolute law that you will force people, you know, to move everything electronically and keep it within the circle and not let cash, no leakage is allowed.
Well, if you back in 98, 99, when I researched this, I talked to the Federal Reserve of St. Louis, an economist there, and I talked to several people in the Treasury Department, and they said, well, we think that probably 70 to 75% of the U.S. currency in circulation circulates outside the United States. Well, if you take the present amount of currency in circulation and you multiply it by 30% and you divide that by the number of people in the country, what you come up with is about $994 a head. So they don't have the money. That's the first thing. They don't have the money. And I don't know if it's bank policy, it's federal government policy, or it's both. But their purpose is to discourage you from taking money out of the system, because they can slip those electrons around without any trouble. They can't handle those paper bills without any trouble. Also, I have another customer whose mother has some CDs in a bank down in Mississippi that she wanted to get out, and her mother is an older woman, and she's she's very complacent, and so if they say no to her, she'll just hang up and go away. And so I wasn't there this afternoon, but Justin called a friend of mine who's a banker in Memphis, and he said, look, when she goes and tries to pull those CDs out, they're going to try every way in the world to tell her they can't do it and that she shouldn't do it. And the fact is, when the bank gets hold of your money, then they act like it's their money. And I know you don't go this far, but I'm at the point where I feel like both for the safety and for the control of my own assets, I'm ready to keep my reserve funds in gold and just take the risk that it might go down. I've done that for two different charitable organizations that I manage their funds for in the last 10 years, and one for 10 years, one for 3 years. And both of them are so far ahead of the games, it's ridiculous. I mean, one of them has the one I've managed the shortest period of time has almost a 70% gain. And we haven't done anything more clever than just buy gold and hold it. And the reason I'm saying that is at least if they close the banks, if they do this, that, or the other, if they limit withdrawals, whatever, at least I've got the gold out of the system. I've got my assets out of the system in a form where I can transfer them and I control them. Now,
I also think it's a tremendous argument for building, if you can, building your overhead in your home base so that you have as little need for cash as possible. Some people can't do that. But when somebody says to me, oh, well, it's not economic to do that, to me, it's more than just what the cost is today. It's what is the benefit of not needing any money in the system.
Precisely.
So
that's
exactly
right. Because there is almost no limit to the imagination that evil people have, and that the folks that we face in the government and in the Federal Reserve are evil people with an evil purpose. And they will do anything they need to do, including shoot their mother in front of a cop, if they have to keep the whole game going. So that means they would stop the bank, they would limit withdrawals, they might, confiscate everything over a certain amount, but they won't call the confiscation. They'll say, well, you can only draw out XYZ at a certain time. You only have access to XYZ dollars.
I would like to point out, though, that I'm always told by people that we have no power, but it seems to me, if everybody just moved their money out of Bank of America and moved it over to a small community bank, so that what we're talking about, frankly, is a system that's unbelievably leveraged. So when you did it in 2004, you showed $164 of lending power for every dollar of deposit. So it just seems to me what you're talking about is real power. So we have the power to shift the game by both where we bank and where we keep our money. So there's there's a power in this, but we have to use it.
Well, and you know, the moral of this story is, you see how much power that is when this one little lady goes in there and says, "I want my money," and they just come unglued. And at every at every step, they show that they are liars and defalcators at every single step, and they completely break the law and their word in everything that they promise to do. So the thing is, when you know that, when you have it laid out before your eyes, now you're responsible to do something about it. You're responsible to take some kind of protective action.
Now, I don't know if you saw it. I sent it to you. Max Kaiser reported that the French are now limiting how much cash can be used to buy precious metals you have to use with a bank wire or a credit card. So, you know, it looks like this is happening on both sides of the Atlantic. One question I wanted to ask you, if we do see $1 billion of corporate profits repatriated, what effect could that have on the prices in precious metals market?
Well, I just haven't really thought about that. I think, though, that you've got this gold bull market rolling down the hill, so to speak. It's like an avalanche, and it's building speed.
Right.
So it has not yet reached the public. It's not reached the stage where the public is participating. And when I say that stage, I think from 1995 till 2000 in the stock market, when you heard about Joe Blow, who quit his day job and went to work, you know, day trading stocks and was making zillions of dollars a year. That stage has not come. So if more people have more money, they'll put it in, some of them will put it in the gold. If what you're talking about stabilizes the stock market, and has some appearance of reviving the U.S. economy, then, you know, that would pull air out of the...
Well, here's the conundrum that they're all in. I agree with you. There's two ways out of this. One is inflation and one is Blarney. And the reality is that you can print money all day long, but that doesn't mean that consumers have money to spend.
Well, let me ask this question, though. Does this mean that they will create more or less money? I mean, it seems to me that what it means is that they're trying to figure out a way to create more money and get it in consumers' hands. I think that what this, if they do that, what it means is, why are they doing it? What is the purpose? The purpose is that they can't keep the game going. They tried printing money one way and it didn't work, and in essence, this is just a way to print money another way. And it won't get rid of the inequities. This is the same game they pulled with the savings and loan crisis, and they pulled it several times before. They dump all of the garbage into one can and then slowly drain the can. That's what they're planning, you know, that's what they're planning on doing. It's what it sounds like to me anyway. So I don't really think, I think that once a primary trend, and I'm going to sound a little fatalistic here, but maybe it's not really fatalism. I think once a primary trend starts, it runs, it finishes itself. And there may be a lot of circumstances that come along and you say, that's the cause or that's the cause. But really the fundamental cause of all this is that the U.S. government and the currencies are not trustworthy and they're not workable. And until some fundamental change is made that restores a sound and stable economy and a sound and stable currency, I think this is going to go on. And I think, you know, that they believe that the only answer is more inflating. Well, that means that has to be, over the long term, good for gold and silver. Has to be. Just by definition.
Right.
Because that's
Let's just talk a little bit, because I want to come back down to ground. We're all faced, you know, whether we can depend. I mean, if we're going to reinvent the economy, we can't wait for the government to help. If anything, the government's going to be a problem. Because, and I want to use the example of when we did the financial permaculture conference a couple years ago in Hohenwald, Tennessee, near you. We put together a group of people and started to work on sort of what businesses could develop in Hohenwald. And, you know, the thing got going and it started to develop some real juice, and all of a sudden a whole bunch of government money, two things showed up, fraudsters and government money, and it split the board right down the middle, and some sort of went off with the fraudsters and then the government money, and the rest of us said, well, you know, we want nothing to do with government money. We want to come up with businesses that are you know, that's just completely private, and a willing buyer and a willing seller can enter into a transaction, and it adds value. But it was, I would say this, that what came out the other side was, you know, there's some good businesses that are now coming out of it, and which I think are going to go someplace, but it was much dampened by having to fight off the government money. And, you know, we lost a lot of people and a lot of energy. And I think the same thing's going to happen. And I was saying to you earlier this week, you are one of the few people I know who can always see the game and always goes to build the authentic business, you know, whether it's precious metals or a newsletter or a farm, or, you know, now a beautiful church. I have to put in a plug for my church. You know, you never seem to get tricked by the government money. And I was just wondering what we could say to folks who are looking to build and start new enterprises, how to do that. So how do you do that, Franklin? Because you do it well.
Well, you just remember the proverb. The proverb is, all government money comes with a sock in the jaw. And it decapitalizes the person who takes it. You know, I'll give credit to somebody who I read years ago, is Harry Brown, and, you know, How I Found Freedom in an Unfree World. And I certainly don't accept all of Harry Brown's ideas, but he did say some things that were really, really good. And one of them was, he told a story about a girl he met in Vancouver who had very curly hair. And he complimented her on her hair, and she said, oh, I just can't stand it, because at the time, the fashion was straight hair. And she says, I just can't do anything well. I can't get it straightened out. He said, well, you know, you're really making a mistake, because maybe 80% of the men in Vancouver like straight hair, but the other 20% like curly hair. And you don't have any competition there. So... you ought to just curl that hair as tight as you can get it. And I guess that's the, you know, the lesson there is, you be what you are, what you do well, and find the people who want that. There are a lot of people who don't want that. And the best thing you can do is drop them like a hot potato as quick as you find out, and just tell them, look them in the eye and say, hey, you really don't want to do business with me, because you and I are not going down the same road. And
right.
You just be what you are. And if you do that, sooner or later, if you show integrity and competence, you're going to attract those people who like curly hair, which is what you've got.
Right. Well, I will tell you that having excellent clients and excellent subscribers makes you smarter. We got a whole bunch of questions, so let me just quick run some at you. Would the EverBank foreign currency CDs be a worthy way to protect from dollar debasement?
No.
I don't know if you've ever dealt with EverBank. I'm not a big fan of EverBank.
Okay. Well, EverBank, there was an incident recently that happened to a customer of mine who had an account with EverBank. And he bought not an excessive amount of precious metals. It was like $25,000. And he was going to wire the money from EverBank. And so he called them to put in the wire, and the girl just gave him the third degree. What are you going to do? What are you going to use the money for? You know, this, that, and the other. And he said, well, you know, this is really not any of your business. Let me talk to the supervisor. And he got the same runaround from the supervisor. And this went on over the course of 2 or 3 days. And I'm not going to do business with any bank that does that to me. I've never heard of that happening with another bank. Never, ever. So I know EverBank has offered these foreign currency CDs for some time. I don't want foreign currency, just like the Swiss franc. All these people ran into the Swiss franc. They thought that it was a safe bet, and what did the Swiss National Bank do? They stabbed them in the back to the tune of 7% loss in one day. So
the Swiss, if that much capital is pouring in and you have nothing to do with it, you can see why they wouldn't want it. Another one.
But it's a fiat currency.
What is the advantage to investing in physical gold and silver as opposed to an ETF? Are there any ETFs that are fully collateralized? Why don't I take that one?
I can't answer that second question. Yeah, go ahead.
The if you look at the homepage, it's larry.com. We've got a couple articles. One is options on storage of precious metals. If you don't want to hold precious metals at home, how do you go about buying in good depositories? We also have one on Zurich Canton Bank ETF, which is one of the fully collateralized ETFs. If you also look at the model trade model portfolio fact sheet at the CLeanAdvisory.com, it will show you the ETFs, they're funds that we use that we believe are fully collateralized. It's the central fund of Canada family. A lot of the ETFs, if you look at our article, GLD and SLV, disclosure in the precious metals market, the precious metals puzzle palace, obviously we're not comfortable with those, and we think a lot of ETFs are not fully collateralized. And if you read that article, there are a lot of other problems with ETFs. The IMF is, and this is really scary, the IMF has been warning about ETFs, and so we think there's a real risk of a shakeout coming, particularly if we have a difficult patch in the market. So the advantage of holding actual gold and silver is you've got fee title. And the advantage of holding it, you know, where you control it is if anybody comes and knocks at your door, you can get up and leave and take it with you and put it in your pocket. So there are different kinds of risks of having things in different places. But the more you have legal fee title ownership and control, I think the better off you are. Now, that said, if you live in the middle of Manhattan, you might not want to have $5 million of Coup Grants in your apartment. So there's some trade-offs. Franklin, anything to add?
No, that's it. You know, it's the issue is title and control. And whenever you don't actually have control, physical possession of it, then all you have is title. And your title is subject to someone else's performance. And when those people have a record of unreliability, then better be careful.
There's one off of the precious metals topic that I wanted to ask before we close, and that is, how does Cliff High explain why his predictions of collapse didn't come true? I'm listening to your interview with High from August 6, 2009, where he cuts you off frequently and is confident in his interpretation that his metadata indicates a collapse. Is not, I think you were right on target, that his web bots were collecting information that's based on people's own fears. Anyway, you and I have lived for many, many years with people who predict collapse, and then collapse doesn't happen. And nobody ever talks about, well, how come it didn't happen? You know, they just come out with the next collapse prediction. And I didn't know if you wanted to say anything on this one, but I do feel that the system has, you know, 1,000 rabbits they can continue to pull out of the hat, you know, including warfare. And if you go back in history, if you read, you know, the 10 top dates in the history of precious metals in America, you just read one rabbit getting pulled out of the hat after another to kind of keep the game going. And I thought maybe you might want to respond to this one.
Well, I think one of the things that people underestimate is the inertia in a system, in any system, and the inertia in humanity. Every day, 5 billion people wake up, and they don't wake up saying, "What am I going to do when everything collapses today?" They're all saying, "What do I do to keep my own life from collapsing today?" And so there's this tremendous inertia going forward to keep things up in the air, to believe that things will go on. Also, you have to remember that the Federal Reserve has been there nearly 100 years, and they can print lots of money to hire very good talent to help them manipulate things so that the big end doesn't come. And like I said, people want to believe that there isn't a collapse coming. I think there's a lot of wishful thinking in every collapse in the collapse mentality. That is, people say, well, you know, there's just such a mess here, and it can't be cleaned up, and it can't be fixed, so let's just have a collapse and get rid of it. Isn't that right? You're laughing, but
it's like when
right?
People say that they're going to default on the treasuries. If they can just print money, how are they going to default?
They can't.
Your money may not be worth anything,
but they won't default. Yeah, sure. And then another thing that I don't like about the collapse mentality is I've seen too many people whose souls were captured by that fear of collapse, so that they withdraw from any productive effort. That takes over their mind.
Right, you give up on the future.
Right, that's exactly right. And I can't give up on the future. I mean, I've got children and grandchildren. I'm not going to give up on the future. And so I think, first of all, discontinuous events are extremely rare in history. They happen, but they don't happen very often. And it's in everyone's interest to continue the inertia of the system. In other words, it's in everyone's interest that everything doesn't collapse. It will be an accident and an error if it does. And I'm not saying it's impossible by any means, but it's much more likely that it will end up in what you call the slow burn, where things go slowly bad and they try to manage it, and inflation never quite reaches hyperinflation, but it just becomes more and more severe, and things go from bad to worse, but nothing collapses.
I just want to say two words on the for the Let's Go to the Movies this week. I had a little RSA animation of Erin Reich's description of her book, or the thesis in her book, Bright Sided, about how positive thinking is destroying America. And it's quite marvelous if you haven't seen it. I don't know, you know, you live such a healthy life, Franklin. I don't think you haven't had to deal with corporate, you know, sort of the corporate required positive thinking.
Okay.
Have you?
No, I haven't, as a matter of fact. I'm not very high on positive thinking, to be honest with you.
Okay, well, if you've ever been to an outplacement service, you'll get a kick out of a look at the Barbara's sort of unpacking of this psychotic philosophy. Anyway, so Franklin, that's it for this week. Thank you so much. We look forward to talking to you in October when I will be back with you at the Shoe in Tennessee. I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful time at the beach.
Oh, thank you. And I hope you have a good time up there, too, in Massachusetts.
I will. I will. Ocean air. Okay. Next week, Peter Arland, wonderful serial entrepreneur, author of The Startup Guide, and we'll be talking about startup financing for the rest of us. It's the best book I know on how to finance a new business and how to think about building equity in a new business. Very, very talented person. His website is antiventurecapital.com. And then September 22nd, wonderful news, Adam Trombley has agreed to come back to talk about zero-point energy. That's his main focus. He's a physicist and scientist and has been working with energy technology and free energy technology, and was the sponsor of the wonderful conference in Switzerland where he brought inventors and engineers from around the world who've been working with free energy. It was very, very exciting, and so I hope to be able to share a lot of that with you. Again, could have a very significant impact on what happens in the economy if that technology starts to get integrated. So until next week with Peter Arland, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.